Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to episode 10 of the Instant Offense Podcast. I'm James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com. Episode 10 is going to be a lot of fun. So we were doing the preview series. So far we were knocked out. LA, we've had Spurs, Orlando. Today we're joined by a special guest. I got Mr. Brady Fredrickson of PistonsPower.com. Brady, you there? Hey, Brady, what's up, man? Oh, I don't know. I'm not getting him in there. We're joined by Brady Fredrickson of PistonsPower.com. He's one of my favorite follows. A lot of fun. And we're not getting him in right now for some reason. I think we'll have to hang up and call him back, have him call back. Yeah, he's going to hang up and call right back. We're going to discuss all things Pistons, all things Detroit. A lot of questions from Twitter about Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, a lot of the moves they made. So we're going to get into it here in a minute once he calls back. A lot of things going on in the offseason so far for them. I'm really high on the Pistons this offseason. I think they made a lot of really good moves, and the more I looked at them just now getting ready for the show, I saw a lot more things I really liked. So a big thing I think for them is going to be Ilyasova. Ersan Ilyasova, he's a great stretch four candidate, and I think we have Brady with us now.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Brady? No, I don't think it's your fault. I think you called in right when the show went live, and somehow it just kind of hung up because I was trying to get you on the air. No big deal, man.
Okay.
How's it going, brother?
I'm good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad, man. I appreciate you being so patient, man. I've been asking you for, probably months to come on the show and talk to Detroit, and, we just never really matched up, so I'm glad we caught up finally.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where it's kind of like that off-season slow period where there's nothing – there's, nothing but beating the same drum, and now we're getting to the point where everything's starting to be, exciting. Everybody's kind of trying to figure out what's going to happen, so it's a little more exciting and a little more fresh considering we're, a month away.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How long have you been with Piston Power?
I want to say this will be, 3 years now, maybe slightly more than that. I was just, once I graduated from college, I was between college and working, and I started working with Dan Feldman then, and then it's just kind of grown from there. So, yeah, it's cool, though.
Nice. So, yeah, I was checking out some of your archives over at Piston Power, and you also write for The Ledger, am I correct?
Yeah, in Lakeland, Florida. Yep, at the newspaper, for those who don't know.
Yeah, you look like you're about 15, and you got a fake beard on, so you got that Rick Rubio face.
I like that, though. I think that's a compliment.
Oh, yeah. You're going to love it when you get older, how long have you been a Pistons fan? Are you a Pistons fan? Is that your team? Or are you an NBA fan in general? Who's your squad? Who did you grow up watching?
No, it's the Pistons. I mean, it's kind of – I'm a general fan, too. But, no, I mean, I grew up with the Pistons back when it was kind of a – because I'm only 25, so it was kind of the awkward period after everybody was good. And, the two championships. And then there was kind of that period where it was like old Joe Dumars and young Grant Hill. And then – Jerry Stackhouse, and then it kind of just grew from there.
Yeesh. That was you guys had some bleak times, man. Once you guys moved on from Grant Hill, things were pretty ugly for a while. Then you got the Chauncey Billups squad in there, and you guys brought Rashid in, and things were really great for quite a few years.
Yeah, the thing is I wouldn't trade the 6-7 years when they had, the Chauncey Rashid years from – I wouldn't trade that to get better – 90s stuff. I think just being able to say I watched Grant Hill when he was doing Grant Hill stuff is pretty cool in itself. So that works out.
No doubt, man. That's one of those all-time, kind of what if that whole terrible ankle thing and Orlando rushing him back. And, he almost died from the surgeries. He got a pretty bad infection, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy considering, when it happened, it was one of those things that I think the final time it really flared up was in the playoffs. He got hurt again. And that was the last thing. And then, they signed and they signed him to Orlando. And and all they get back is I'm pretty sure it was just, you know, Chucky Atkins and this guy named Ben Wallace, who nobody really knew about. And that ended up being the kind of first domino to what would eventually be a title in all the Eastern Conference Finals and everything.
Exactly, man. And then, yeah, I guess the GM and the front office down in Orlando tried to rush him back. And, yeah, he was an all-timer. But, like you said, you guys got, in your own way, got your own all-timer back, because Ben Wallace is one of those truly unique freak of nature kind of players that, you know, once in a generation in his own way, almost like Dennis Rodman, where, you know, came from humble roots. You didn't really know who he was. And he was something else in his prime, man.
And that's the thing is, it's like those kind of players that you look at all the new guys coming into the league every year, and there's never, I think, there's never been a time where I've watched a guy come into the league and said, you know, seriously, said, this guy is going to be, this guy reminds me of Ben Wallace, this guy reminds me of Dennis Rodman, because I just don't think that's a comparison that you see. Like, honestly, the funny thing is, when the Pistons picked up Tony Mitchell a few years ago, who I had high hopes for because he was, you know, the athletic freak who could, you know, do a lot of stuff. Everybody was saying that this guy can be like Dennis Rodman. And it's like, well, let's slow down, because right now all this guy can do is jump really high. And turns out that's all he could do, period. So, you know, it's easier to profile that comparison than there actually is to find it.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the NBA. It's kind of a copycat league, and everybody wants to be the first one to say, hey, I knew this guy would be good. So they like to try to imbue the talent level on somebody that they see, oh, well, he reminds me of this guy, so I'm going to say, oh, he's the next guy. I don't like when they do that.
It is fun, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's part of what makes the league fun, the kind of barbershop arguments and the barbershop discussions where we kind of just, you know, just talk basketball, which is exactly what we're about to do. Last season was probably kind of a roller coaster for you. The Pistons were pretty putrid early. They made a key move and they got rid of Josh Smith. Can you talk to me a little bit about your own range of emotions last season? Let's start from the beginning before the Josh Smith move. What were your thoughts going into the season as the season went on?
I mean, I thought they would be better because it was just one of those things where I was under the assumption that, you know, and I think everybody kind of falls in love with the idea because Stan Van Gundy did so much with Orlando and with non-traditional lineups that I was thinking, if anybody's going to be able to make this awkward, you know, three power forward kind of lineup work, it would be him. But he was kind of, you know, and it's part of his own doing because, you know, he's making the decisions on who's coming in to play on the team too. So it's not like you can just say, oh, well, the Pistons GM put him in a bad spot, because that's also him. So he ended up having to play Smith at small forward, which, you know, there was still a part of me that thought, you know, as talented as he was, that he could try and be a little more Lamar Odom in terms of passing and handling and rebounding. But the point of it is just that he's not a good ball handler, and he can't turn down those bad shots, especially when it's not like, I mean, in Houston, Josh Smith was great because he was taking those shots and his team was never really down. But, I mean, I think with Detroit, Josh Smith tried to be the guy to lead them back every single time they needed it. And that's when he started to really wear on people, was when you'd see him pull up for jumpers and just settle for garbage shots. And I figured Van Gundy could fix that. And that obviously wasn't the case initially until he got rid of him.
Yeah, that was just I'm not going to use the word enigmatic anymore because we kind of know who he is. He's going to take bad shots. He's extremely talented, but a million-dollar talent, 10-cent brain kind of. But yeah, I'm not saying he's stupid, but something about his basketball sense is just not very good. So Stan Van Gundy made the bold move, pulled the plug on that, and you guys actually came out the gates roaring. You ripped out the gates. How many wins did you guys have? And tell me how you felt. Like, what was the attitude around the team around that time?
I think it was 8 wins in a row initially. And I remember the first one was, at that point, everyone had kind of assumed that Indiana was still going to be one of those top-tier teams in the East. And the Pistons came out and just popped them. And I was like, all right. And Brandon Jennings looked like a new guy. And that was the biggest thing, was that Jennings was so bad with those three big men playing all the time, because he's a guy that again, doesn't take the best shots all the time, but he can get into the lane. He can at least find guys and get and find his own shots. But when there's so little spacing, he gets in there, and it was just like he was throwing up, you know, this and that. And really, it was just he looked uncomfortable. And so when everything opened up and he had an extra shooter to pass out to, everything opened up for him. And that was what kind of set it off, because you open the space up for your point guard, that opens up the space for Greg Monroe, and then it opened up breathing room for Andre Drummond, who really, you know, last year at the start was just suffocated because he's not a guy who could go down there and create his own looks. So for somebody who really relies on others creating for him and the defense sagging off of him because of that, you know, he was just lost, because it was like the only way to get him the ball was to try and post him up, and that was just way over his head at that point, at least. I think he's improved in that. But, yeah, it was just everything opened up and everything got fun. And, of course, I mean, you know, it was only 16 games technically that they really ran off that before Brandon Jennings got hurt. But, you know, during that stretch, I don't think people have had that much fun watching the Pistons in a long time.
Yeah, I remember that one of the Spurs, man, that you know, that last-second thrill over the Spurs. And that's when I really started paying attention, because that was just an awesome game. That was the – wasn't that the – we got to build the effing wall game. And
yeah,
those last 15 – yeah, before the last 15 games, before Jennings got hurt, he was giving you guys 20 points, 7 assists. He was shooting 39% from three. Probably the best stretch of his career. And then, you know,
yeah.
I think it was the very end of the game when right before halftime, I think, when his Achilles, right, and went.
Yeah, in Milwaukee, and then everything fell apart after that.
It fell apart, but then, you know, it still was kind of promising, because I think D.J. Augustin played lights out for you guys. And it was a struggle no matter what to make playoffs. Then you guys made the moves, and so this is where we're going to kind of transition into this season, because the moves that you made even then, like if you made them this offseason, people say you had a great offseason, but you made them in the middle of the season. You got a mystery of a point guard, Reggie Jackson. Let's talk a little bit. We're going to jump right into Reggie Jackson. So, before Reggie Jackson came over, he was about 13 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. He was very unhappy in OKC. That's well chronicled. And then we saw Jekyll and Hyde in Detroit. First 11 games,
exactly.
Going up on the bench. Yeah, you talk to me about that. He was like 14 points, 7 assists, a lot of turnovers, wasn't shooting well. You guys like lost 10 out of 11. What were your feelings about him?
The thing about Reggie Jackson when he first came over was, I think for any, and specifically in the offense that Van Gundy has, where obviously he has a touch with these point guards, because he made Brandon Jennings, you know, obviously he tweaked everything, but Brandon Jennings, the light bulb went off, it looked like. And obviously D.J. Augustin has shown flashes of that kind of stuff. But for him, even under Van Gundy, he thrived in that wide open, one big, four out kind of thing. So it was a good fit for Reggie Jackson, but I think at the same time, you look at Brandon Jennings and you look at Augustin and those guys, and even Spencer Dinwiddie a little bit, those guys had time to see this and learn this and work on this in the preseason and training camp, whereas Reggie Jackson goes from an offense that, you know, I'm sure most Thunder fans will say was not the most creative, to one where the point guard is literally it's kind of you're taking the ball and you're figuring this out. There's really the Pistons don't really have any of those other, you know, off the dribble creators on that team. So he had to kind of just get the ball, and they were going to say, it's kind of like if you go to the Y and you play with a team of guys who have played together, and then they just throw you out there and you have to try and fit in. You just have no idea how to make it work, especially when you've grown used to playing with two of the five best players in the league. So I think it was frustrating. There was a time when it was just like, why did they trade for this? I mean, there was a faint hope that, hey, maybe D.J. Augustin can get in the playoffs. But once it clicked for him, kind of, or at least when he started to get comfortable, which ironically kind of happened during Greg Monroe's injury, when things opened up even more and they had Anthony Tolliver up there. And that was the thing, was that, you know, I talked about spacing with Jennings, and, you know, with Reggie Jackson, I mean, Reggie Jackson is better than Brandon Jennings at getting to the rim and finishing. And, you know, I think they're equivalent passers down there too, once they get into the paint. So once it clicked for him, I mean, he was, I guess, you know, the funny thing is Brandon Jennings' big spurt was 16 games, and so was Reggie Jackson's. They were both 16. So, I mean, what one was more sustainable, I don't know. But I just know that we've seen more of the regression from Jennings, and we've seen less of what Reggie Jackson, you know, the bad side is, and more of what he can be. And this is the first time anybody's really seen that in a sample size more than just a couple playoff games a few years ago. So I thought it was impressive. I mean, I was – by the end of the year, you know, it was, I saw him in person once, too, when they were in Orlando. I covered that game, and, you know, he was just impressive as hell at everything. I mean, the jump shot still needs work, but everything else was just exactly what you want from a guy in today's league where everything is spacing and everything is slashing and dishing and, you know, all that.
Yeah, man, and I think you hit the nail on the head, and I don't think it was a coincidence. Once Drummond went down, he took off. His last 16 games, you said, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 11 assists, only 3.7 turnovers. He was shooting almost 50% from the floor. Almost 40% of his threes went down, and you guys went 9-7 in the last 16. And yeah, it's kind of like garbage time of the season, but, I mean, he looked really, really good. And him and Drummond had a great, great, seemed like a chemistry in that pick and roll. Like you said about Drummond, first, those last 16 games, the last 27 games, Drummond was a 16-point, 15-rebound machine while the first half of the season. Before RJ got there, he was a 13-13 guy shooting less than 50%. So, I mean, we can't really put a finger on, you know, chemistry and what makes a team go, but that's like a light switch going off.
Yeah, and that was the thing with those two particularly is that, you know, and another thing that I'll say this just to defend, because I think wins and losses, especially – at the end of the year versus when Jennings was doing his stuff, is that, you know, Brandon Jennings had, and these guys are not, by no means is Kyle Singler, you know, an all-world player, but Reggie Jackson got stuck playing with, like, Caron Butler with zero battery power left and Tayshaun Prince, and there was the Pistons traded a lot of, you know, players away to get him back, and although they weren't great players, they were still depth. So, I mean, the Pistons really were devoid of any sort of NBA-caliber small forward, which of course, affected everything with him, and, you know, it didn't help that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was very up and down. But the thing with Drummond was that, just in general, of being the focal pointer or not having to be the guy that, you know, was just, here, we're going to throw you the ball, make something happen. I think having somebody who could run the pick and roll with him and was a threat to score off that too, you know, at least at the rim, helped him a lot because it drew a lot of attention off him. And obviously, you know, when he goes on his stretches, he's as tantalizing as there is of guys who are, you know, 22, 21 years old.
Oh, yes, most definitely, man. And that's a good point, because it seems like you guys have your core now. You have Reggie in the fold. Give him a pretty good chunk of change, but, you know, the new cap, all that stuff. We're not going to talk about the new cap. Everybody knows about the new cap. Drummond, I think, seems to be, even though we've been saying this the last couple of years, seems to be primed for a breakout. And then you got Caldwell Pope, and you drafted hope maybe your future in Stanley Johnson. Let's talk about your offseason.
Yeah.
Are there any key losses? Any losses that you look at? You think, I wish we could have kept him. Because I'm looking at it, I don't see anybody. Well, of course, I'm sorry. Of course, Drummond as an asset, but it might be almost a less is more kind of thing. So I'm sorry. You run the show. Who do you think? Any key losses that you think might? You could have held on
right,
to.
No, you mean Greg Monroe. Here's the way I look at the Greg Monroe thing is that was in the problem with Greg Monroe is that was the final, I mean, you could argue otherwise, but, you know, Greg Monroe leaving the Pistons for nothing was really the last, like, stab of a knife in the Pistons' back by Joe Dumars, because Dumars was the one who decided to go get Josh Smith instead of offering him a contract. And Greg Monroe wanted to stay, it seemed like. So if you give him a contract that's, you know, especially 2 years ago, that money compared to what it's going to be, you'd have him at a bargain. And still, if he's under contract and Stan Van Gundy decides this guy's not going to fit, you can move him because he's not, you know, he's good. So that's an asset in itself. But the fact that he signed his qualifying offer and that, you know, that forced the Pistons' hand where they could only trade him if he wanted to be traded, and then, you know, he's not going to walk because he wants that extra year of money and everything, which he didn't even get. But he took a 3-year deal worth a lot. So, you know, that was just a bad situation. But the way I look at it and the way I pull people is that if you look at all the new guys the Pistons got, not counting the ones they signed, like, if you look at it, they trade, assume they traded just for, you know, if it makes you feel better. The Pistons basically traded Greg Monroe, Caron Butler, and Sean Williams for Ersan Ilyasova, Marcus Morris, Reggie Bullock, and I guess the carcass of Danny Granger. So they got a lot of guys. They got talent back. And this was a team that didn't have any depth last year after they traded for Reggie Jackson. That was the problem. If there was nobody left to really be that second, you know, rotation kind of thing. And that's what I think they're going to be vastly improved this year, is they're going to actually have a second lineup to throw at you, and they'll actually have talent and, you know, will cause problems and have guys who can actually play basketball. So if you look at it that way, that's not a bad thing at all. They traded Greg Monroe for four guys who are going to be in their rotation.
You're absolutely right. And that's actually, you guys had a really, 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 really good offseason, especially if you throw in, like, in a way, I'm going to throw in Reggie Jackson for the simple fact that, you know, you did a late season trade for him and then you locked him up, which is good, even though there wasn't anyone else really bidding for a service, but whatever. You know, he's the point guard of the future from what it seems like Stan Van Gundy's saying. And you also,
I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced they would have gotten Reggie Jackson if he were a free agent. That's just based on the fact that, and the thing is a lot of, and I don't live in Michigan anymore, so it's not like I'm not of the Detroit's great and I don't know why people don't want to come here. It's just a fact that guys don't want to, you know, guys who are 26 don't want to come to Detroit and play basketball just because of, it's not L.A., it's not New York, it's not Miami. So I don't think Reggie Jackson was going to be a free agent, you know, in general and say, ooh, Detroit, I want to go there. Unless, of course, right, they paid him. So that's why I look at the money and it's just, you throw it out, because in order to get good players in the Pistons position, you have to kind of get creative like they did.
You got to overpay a little bit, maybe get the guys that you want, you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's a very good call. It's absolute fact. It's funny because, you know, I think John Wall made a comment about his contract, and I think a lot of experts and a lot of the very knowledgeable basketball people, they kind of panned that contract because they're like, well, you know, they threw a lot of money at him that they kind of didn't have to. And I think a lot of people are – I'm really high on Reggie Jackson. I liked him. I liked when he started for Russell Westbrook a couple years ago. The talent is there. Last year was – it's true. He was pouting, and that's kind of indefensible. That's a very bad look for him. But the guy can play. I mean, he showed it in the playoffs for OKC. He showed it last year in that last stretch. He can play basketball. But a lot of people are very high on him because they're saying, no, he's 25. How much better is he going to get? I think you got a borderline all-star there as far as the talent. Let's see if Coach Van Gundy can get the best out of him.
That's probably what I would say that's his ceiling, I think, would be that borderline kind of guy. And, I mean, does that put him with, like, I mean, can he be as good as Kyle Lowry? I think so. But, I mean, I don't think you're, like, as the Toronto Raptors have learned, I don't think that's not the guy you went with as your best player. But luckily, if all goes according to plan, like, you know, Van Gundy thinks, then he'll hopefully, you know, have Reggie Jackson be his second or even third best player if Stanley Johnson and Andre Drummond play out. So then you're kind of in a good spot there. So, I mean, yeah, and I don't know. The thing about money, too, is people did kind of look at that contract with a crooked eye. But Brandon Knight, who I actually really liked when he was in Detroit, Knight was horrendous with the Suns. Although he didn't play very much and was hurt, he was just bad. He was Pistons Brandon Knight again. And they paid him more money. So, and I get that he's a little younger, but I just don't see how that's such a, you know, egregious thing to pay Reggie Jackson this much, because – He might rub you the wrong way, whereas Brandon Knight, who is, you know, quieter than rock, you know, it's going to be, oh, good, I feel good for Brandon Knight, good for him. It's kind of one of those deals where it's more opinion of the player's personality than his actual on-court output most recently.
Yep, and like you said, I think a big part of it is the pouting. A lot of people, you know, I mean, look, we're sports fans. We want our players to care just as much as we do. We want our players to give 110% every night. And, you know, in a perfect world, they would. Reggie didn't handle it the best in OKC. You know, he kept, you know, pushing, I want to be a starter. I guess the championship wasn't on his mind. He wanted to be his own player, and now he has that chance.
Yeah.
I like him. I think he's going to get that jump shot together. Who's your starting five?
Opening night? I would say, well, I don't think Brandon Jennings will be back by then. I people are very hopeful that he'll be back from this torn Achilles, but like the torn Achilles is underrated like injury in sports potentially when you factor in kind of how basketball is played. So I think it'll be Reggie Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Marcus Morris, Ersan Ilyasova, and Drummond. And I think that's going to be the lineup for a little bit because I think it just gives you the best of what you're looking for from spacing and from hopefully improvement from three of those guys and hopefully good fits from the other two. I mean, that would be the best shooting lineup the Pistons have had, arguably. You know, I can't remember the last time they had guys who could shoot like that. It might have honestly been the last time they had a lineup that could shoot decently with like that from every spot would have been when they were having Austin Day and Charlie Villanueva, who obviously stunk but could do one thing, and that was shoot three-pointers. So,
dude, Joe Dumars gave Charlie Villanueva how much? It was him and Ben Gordon. I think they had combined like almost $90 million.
I want to say Ben Gordon got 50 and Charlie Villanueva got like 40 or might have been 55 and 40 or something like that. It was too much, obviously.
Joe Dumars is as great a player as he was and as great a job as he did putting together that championship squad in 2004. I don't know what was going on. You know, I think he got a little full of himself and, you know, got a little too cute with it, I guess. All right, enough of that.
I always thought the one thing about Joe Dumars, and I met him once, and he was really nice, and we had coffee real quick. It wasn't like anything formal. We just crossed paths, and he was super nice. But the thing about him was he, you know, obviously the league now is all into shooting and stuff. He was ahead of the curve a little bit on that because he tried to get, when he had the lineups, when he got Villanueva, he was trying to get the Rashard Lewis because, you know, no, Orlando was really the only team that had kind of a power forward who could really shoot the ball and do a little bit with the ball. So he started doing that, and he drafted Austin Day with the same idea, I think. But he also was always, and it kind of blew up on him late, he always chased the star. He always wanted to bring a star to Detroit. And he tried it with Iverson, and it failed. Then he tried it with Ben Gordon, and it failed. Then he tried it with Josh Smith, and that obviously was the nail in the coffin. But, you know, I think he kind of deviated from the idea of a lot of good guys can win you a title, which it did, to trying to build towards the I can't beat LeBron unless I have a star of my own, which it turns out now you need a star to win apparently, or a couple. But, I mean, at least he had the right idea. He just was terrible at finding out who that guy was.
Look at Brady. Look at Brady name dropping a little bit. My bad, man. Coffee with
Joe
Dumars. Hey, man, don't forget about little people when you and Joe Dumars out there having a wine together, whatever.
Yeah, you know, it happens.
You guys have a glut now kind of small forwards. Stanley Johnson's going to need minutes. Like you said, the corpse of Danny Granger, we're not too concerned about that. I'm not even small forward, wings. You got Caldwell-Pope, which, you know, he came on pretty strong towards the end of the year. How do you see that? Jody Meeks is still in the fold. I like Darren Hilliard. I like him kind of probably unreasonably so. How do you see that rotation going? And even Reggie Bullock, which as a throw-in, but, I mean, he's still a tantalizing talent, right? He might be something.
Yeah, no, the thing about it is
I kind of
clump Darren Hilliard and Reggie Bullock together, even though I know Reggie Bullock has shown nothing but an inability to shoot. And that was his thing, was he was drafted by the Clippers as a 3-and-D, and he couldn't do either. And that was kind of, you know, if he goes to Grand Rapids, the D-League, and ends up fixing himself, great. That's a very nice addition because they could still, you know, somehow control him. But Hilliard even, I think he's got a better chance to be something. It's just, you know, from watching him in summer league, and I was out there one, you know, a couple of the days, and I talked to him a few times, and, you know, I think us as, you know, prognosticators and fans and Twitter people and stuff, I mean, we kind of look at it and say, oh, man, 3-and-D this, 3-and-D that. And I think we look at that spot and think, that's a pretty smart thing. That's a pretty good thing. And I think some guys appreciate that role, but I think you ask somebody else, and you ask someone, say, hey, can you be a 3-and-D guy, which is what I asked him. And he kind of said, well, yeah, I guess I can do that, but I can do more. So it's almost like you're
right.
When you call a guy, a 3-and-D, they almost go, well, but I can dribble and I can, you know, break a guy down. So I think it kind of comes off as a slap to the face sometimes, but I think that's more just you don't realize, I don't think guys, basketball players themselves always realize how valuable of a role that is. So, you know, that's a thing. But overall, I mean, Caldwell Pope will start. I think Stanley Johnson's eventually going to start, but the way that I look at that starting five, I think Stanley Johnson's going to want to be, they're going to want Stanley Johnson to be more involved with the ball. And if he's that three out there, I don't think he's going to be working with the ball as much as he'll kind of be cleaning up on the baseline and shooting threes. I don't know if they want him to just be out there camping out shooting threes, because that's kind of Marcus Morris's game. So, you know, those three will definitely play the most. And Jody Meeks is kind of a wild card, because I think part of the reason he was bad last year is because he, you know, hurt his back and missed all of training camp and got a late start, and that obviously threw him off, and he never really got back into it. But, you know, I mean, if he's hot, he'll play. If he's not, he's not. So, I mean, I don't think it'll be quite as extreme as where he'll never play and then he'll play a lot. But, I mean, if Jody Meeks is hitting, I think Caldwell Pope probably loses some minutes. It just depends, because, you know, consistency. I think all four of those guys are, I'm guessing on Johnson, but all four are going to have to really be more consistent than they've been in the past, because, you know, KCP is really a 41-game-a-year guy, because on the road he is not the same as he is at the Palace. So that's something he's got to show, is he can, you know, you can go out and average 16 points and shoot the ball well and play good athletic defense, but you've got to be able to do that when you go to those good teams on the road, or when you go to the bad teams on the road. You can't just start the game 1-for-5 and then kind of let it engulf you, which he does a lot. He kind of starts bad on the road, and then it kind of just gets to him, and then he's either stops shooting or he'll just kind of settle for those pull-up threes, and it just gets kind of rough for him. So he needs to work on that, I think. But if that clicks, that gives them a legitimate wing player, which I don't think they even had one that you would say was, you know, good. They're okay. I don't think you'd say anybody on the Pistons wing was good last year, though.
Wow. I'm looking at his numbers, his home and road splits. At home, you called it. He was about almost 16 points a game. He shot like almost 45% from the floor, 40% from three at home. On the road, 35%, 28% from three, 10 points a game. That is a huge split. Wow.
Yeah. Van Gundy has said that. He's gone like public with that, per se. I mean, to reporters, and they said, hey, you know, this guy's got, he's got to play better. He's got to play better on the road because we need him. I mean, especially in the second half of the year there. I mean, if KCP has a bad game last year at the end of the year, that really puts the Pistons in a position where they got to play Jody Meeks and Caron Butler and Tayshaun Prince, which is just not going to win you many ball games. But luckily, they don't need that anymore. That's gone. That terrible, terrible duo or trio is not going to have to play together anymore. So I'm down with that.
That's the line of it. Power forward. Rick Monroe's gone. You guys brought in Ilya Sova, and you have Anthony Tolliver in the house. Talk to me a little bit about what they mean, because, I mean, Greg Monroe was a fine young player. Again, I think kind of a borderline all-star, and who knows what he's going to do now in a different system and with a little more freedom in the middle. But, you know, he's gone. He was about, what, I think, like a 16-11 kind of guy. You replaced him with Ilya Sova, who was a consummate stretch four, and Tolliver the last couple of years is shooting like almost 40% from three. Talk to me about how they're going to fit into the offense and what they mean for Andre Drummond and for Reggie Jackson.
I think the good that they'll bring is, I think they both obviously can shoot. I think I'm a little worried. I'm not really worried about Tolliver shooting, because that's really all he brings. You know, the Pistons were – the offense looked better when he was out there at the end of the year, but defensively he's not – he's kind of a 3-4 defensively. So he's not great when you're, you know, up against a power forward who can, you know, take the ball down low. And then Ilya Sova, who isn't – if you look at the advanced stats, and Greg Monroe, people will say forever that he's, you know, this horrendous defender. And he's actually improved a lot. He's, you know, depending on how you surround him, he's a very, you know, average, which is fine, I guess, for most if you have the right surrounding cast. But Ilya Sova is not much worse than that. They're different because obviously Greg Monroe's got, you know, 40 pounds on him. But I think offensively they'll get open shots. They'll make open shots. They'll be able to move around. They're definitely a more mobile team now up front. But defensively, I would worry a little bit. And then rebounding-wise is the big thing. We've talked about this before, is that I don't think, you know, Ilya Sova isn't a bad rebounder, but he's not Greg Monroe, who's a really good one. and right. you know, Tolliver's not a great rebounder. So that's where I kind of look at Stanley Johnson as being a guy who eventually steps in, because Stanley Johnson's a very good rebounder as a three. So that's going to be the area, because they, you know, had that twin towers who could get to a lot of, you know, loose balls and stuff. But now it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge, unless Drummond just turns into a vacuum cleaner all the time and averages like 16 boards a game or something like that.
He averaged 16 those last 27 games, six on the offensive board. The guy was a monster.
Yeah.
And like you said, Stanley Johnson can play some four, almost, you know, the new age kind of stretch four. I really like Stanley Johnson. I'm not a big college guy, but, you know, the draft was kind of ramping up, coming towards the draft. I watched a lot of a lot of highlights on him. And the guy is just, you know, a man child. And it's weird. It's always weird when people I really trust and follow, you know, NBA and college, when what I see doesn't jive with what they say. Because, you know, a lot of them are like, oh, well, he's not good at any one thing. Can he put it together at the pro level? He has NBA body. Does he have an NBA game? Is he quick enough? I mean, it is what it is. And NBA is about athleticism. He has plenty of that. It's about being strong. He has plenty of that. And he's shown not a bad scoring touch. What do you project
right.
for him
that's
this year? What kind of minutes you see him getting? And, of course, as always, I already talk about the Rookie of the Year stuff. Give me a little preview of what you think Stanley Johnson is going to do for you guys this year.
I think his impact, at least from a, like, award standpoint, I don't think he's a Rookie of the Year just because of opportunity. I mean, Jahlil Okafor and Emmanuel Mudiay are going to get the ball a heck of a lot more, and that's going to lead to a lot more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at those guys who are, you know, valuable rookies, and I think that's where he kind of fits in, because he's going to be able to fill a lot of different roles. I think you're right. He can play a little four. He's going to play a little two, I think. He'll play a lot of three. And I think, you know, that position, you know, small forward was just so bad last year that, you know, whatever drop-off you have from Greg Monroe down to Ersan Ilyasova and Anthony Tolliver, you know, that's a drop, but I don't think it's a titanic drop-off. But I think the upgrade from Tayshaun Prince and Caron Butler to Stanley Johnson and Marcus Morris, I think that's a huge upgrade. And it was a position that the Pistons were just – they haven't had consistency from. And I think he's not going to be the most consistent, but as long as he can go out there and use that 230-pound frame to defend guys, and, I mean, you know, he kind of fits the bill to what they want. They've got all these athletic, long wing players, and even Reggie Jackson's athletic and long, and that kind of plays into, obviously, what they're trying to build around with Drummond defensively. And I think he'll be good. I think he'll, you know, I think he'll probably hover around 10 points and, like, four rebounds, which would be pretty good. I mean, you know, he's not going to be relied upon to score, but I think he's showing he's a better shooter than we had expected. And even in the summer league, he showed a lot of ability to finish and dribble, and I don't think his handle is by any means like Allen Iverson lightning quick, but in a weird way, he's almost crafty enough to know how to cross you up and get into that little glimmer of space and get to the rim. And so
right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, even the game, one of the days I was there in summer, it was him against Justice Winslow, and it obviously means absolutely nothing in a month. But, and those guys are tired and they're whatever. But I mean, you know, that's against another guy who, by all means, everyone else thinks is going to be a really good NBA player too. So, I mean, you know, he outplayed him and he did a lot more on the court. So, I mean, I think he's going to be good. I don't think he'll be asked to do too much. I think that'll fit exactly what he wants. I think in college he was in a system where they didn't value shooting at all, really. Arizona didn't shoot the ball very much. They attacked the rim. They, you know, kind of marched out there and played that old-school 1990s NBA-style basketball where it was like, we've got some big guys and we've got a bunch of brawn, and this is how we're going to beat you. So I think Van Gundy will find a way to put him in positions to be good. And the thing is if he found a way to make Spencer Dinwiddie look good at times, I don't think Spencer Dinwiddie's really that great as much as people think that. Stanley Johnson
really?
Is a hell of a lot better.
And I agree with that one, but now that's one of my questions, and we might as well hop right into it. Tell me a little bit more about Spencer Dinwiddie, because he was almost like a lottery-level guy. He got injured in college, and that's why he plummeted, and you guys picked him up. So you're not very high on him. Talk to me. What about Spencer gives you a not very good feeling? Why did you say that you're not too high on him?
I'm not low on him per se. I just don't think. I mean, I think he's got very good instincts, and I think he's very crafty. And I think at times last year, and I've talked to people from, you know, just from tweeting and stuff who, you know, kind of knew about him from his college basketball side, and he never really had a – the Pistons offense, like we talked about, was a big space-it-out, pick-and-roll kind of thing, and that wasn't how it was at Colorado. And so, you know, he's not great with Drummond out there, like the pick-and-roll kind of game. And his shooting, I mean, he only shot like 19% from three last year, and, you know, he took like 70, 60, I think it was 65 attempts, so he wasn't like – prolific, but just offensively he couldn't score. And he, you know, I think as the year goes on this year, you know, eventually he's going to be their backup, I think, but I just think he needs to show more. I just wish he was either, you know, from a backup point guard or even a third string point guard as he is right now, you know, young or not, I wish that was either, you know, this guy is really good defensively but he struggles offensively, or this guy can really create and score a little bit but he struggles defensively. But I just kind of think he's kind of stuck in between where he's not great at this and not great at that. And hopefully this season with some time and with, you know, obviously plenty of time after his injury and a training camp to work with, and obviously he wasn't great in summer league, but I think I'm hoping that'll help him, and he'll at least kind of be able to turn into somebody who can come out there and you can trust him for 10 minutes to run the offense and not, you know, either, you know, let the lead sink away because of his defensive inability because he doesn't have the most athleticism. But if he can get his jumper around and combine that with his already pretty good knack for finding guys, I think then he'll be fine as a backup. But what he lacks athletically, he hasn't really made up for in terms of that basketball IQ kind of smart play yet. But, of course, he only played like 30 games last year, so he's got a long way to go.
Okay, well, I'm going to be the good angel on the shoulder of the Pistons fans and say that, you know, he just turned 22. He was 21 for most of last year. He only played 34 games, you know, and let's be real, rookies on the whole usually aren't very good. Even the good rookies, the quote-unquote good rookies, aren't very good. So he struggled, and Detroit had a lot of turmoil last season, everyone on the court. He was the third or fourth point guard on the depth chart, you know, last season, and then trades happened, he got thrown into the mix a little bit. I like him, man. 6'6", you know, long. The fact that he was, you know, Draft Express and all those sites had him, he would have been, you know, maybe late lottery kind of pick before he got hurt. The talent's there. Maybe he's not too athletic, but when you're 6'6", as a point guard, maybe you don't really have to be. So I'm probably a little higher on him than you are. He's very much
right, unknown,
though, as your good point.
That's the thing. People want him to be the backup, and I just don't think he's exactly ready to go out there and give you 20 minutes. And I mean, there's a part of me that thinks, hey, if he can be, you know, and obviously he's a little different player, but if he can end up being Sean Livingston with a little better jumper, I am completely fine with that, because that would be tremendous if he can give you that kind of effort and just be, you know, able to get in the right spots defensively and create. And that's the kind of player I see him as. And that's not just because they're tall point guards. It's just also because they're tall. They're not, you know, built guys. They're both pretty frail. So if he ends up being that, only, you know, a capable shooter, that would be a complete win. And that would kind of play into everything that everybody saw when the Pistons got him in the second round.
Okay, so we're kind of not on opposite sides, of course. So you're pulling for Dinwiddie, but I'm a little higher on him than you are. That's cool. Let's move to another new acquisition you guys got, Aaron Baines.
Oh boy,
he's not really young. Yeah. Oh, this is gonna be fun. He's 28, 3 years a pro. He was he's just kind of lounging around in San Antonio. Got a few significant minutes last season. He played pretty well. He averaged almost 7 and 5 in limited minutes, which is pretty good. Not much of a rim protector. Big body, strong kid. You guys are paying him almost $7 million a year.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You take the floor. Tell me how you feel about Baines. How you feel about the? Yeah, all you.
I can't. I guess I can't defend the contract. Again, I don't. I think. The way the cap works, and we're not going to get into that, the way that it's constantly rising. So I look at a contract like his where he's making $7 million or whatever, $7.5 million, I think, which is all like what, like $1 million, which is $1 million more than Jody Meeks, who everybody thought also got overpaid. But I mean, by the time this whole rise in cap settles down, it won't be that bad. It still looks crazy because it's a backup making that much, but I know he's a smart player. I know in order for Greg Popovich to play him 17, 16, 15 minutes, I mean, he has to obviously have a very high IQ, and I know he can shoot the ball a little bit from the elbows, that kind of a little bit of spacing there, which, you know, Andre Drummond, honestly, Greg Monroe never had that ability. So this would be the first time that Drummond has had a guy who wasn't all the way out to the three-point line, but wasn't, like, giving him a hug in the post. So, you know, if you say, you know, I think we talked about rebounding. I think Aaron Baines is the guy that they think, in limited minutes at least, can kind of play a little bit of power forward and give them a little bit of a bigger combination to where, you know, those nights when, you know, they can't rebound, or those nights inevitably where Drummond gets into foul trouble, then you have to really have somebody who's got some size. So I think he's smart. I don't think he'll be as – I mean, if he was – like last year in San Antonio, he was 7 points and, like, 5 rebounds and, you know, 57% from the field. If he can – and he's a good free throw shooter, too, at 87%. If he gave that this year, if he did that this year, that would be fantastic, because that's the kind of efficiency that you want, you know, out of a backup who's not going to be that rim protector. If he's going to be out there, at least do a lot of other stuff well and don't, you know, clog up the offense. And so if he does that, great. I mean, I kind of think the efficiency will go down because system isn't the same as, you know, the Van Gundy system, for lack of a better term. But, I mean, if he can give them close to that production with that, well, close to that level of efficiency, that's fine. I mean, that would be a good thing, considering last year it was like, hey, Greg Monroe's hurt, so we're going to throw Joel Anthony out there. Or, you know, I just think that people look at these guys and they aren't stars, and they aren't, like, they weren't, they didn't get Damari Carroll, they didn't get Danny Green. But all of the guys they picked up this summer are better than what they had last year. And that's the thing, is they improved at every spot they added somebody. So it wasn't like, you know, the guy may not have been as good as you had hoped, but he was still an improvement over what you had. So that actually, you take a bunch of little improvements, and then you hope that your two big guns improve. And that's a big deal. I mean, if Andre Drummond or Reggie Jackson becomes that all-star that you think they can be, that's as good as wasting, or not wasting, spending, you know, $100 million on somebody in free agency who does the same thing. So, I mean, the guy, he's better than what they've had, and I think he fits with what they are focused on. So, I mean, in that regard, I like it. But from a financial and from a glitz and glamour thing, it was pretty awkward to see the Pistons' first move of the summer be Aaron Baines for $8 million a year.
Yeah, it was eye-opening, and I'm still trying to get my head around it. But, I mean, like you said, I'm looking at your roster top to bottom. And someone made this point to me about the Celtics. I don't know, you know I'm a Celtics fan, and I'm not very happy with what they're doing. But people started cheering me up by saying stuff like, but the whole point is you have no bad players on your roster. And I can look at Detroit's top, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 players and say kind of the same thing. Sure, they're not, you know, going to blow you away with star power pass. You know, I think Drummond's going to be a future all-star. We don't know what Reggie Jackson's quite going to be. But everyone else, I mean, you have quality on your roster. You have a quality 10, 11 players, and that means something. The question about the chemistry, and can Stan Van Gundy get everybody? You know, he's going to have to – it's up to him now to allocate the minutes and get a rotation and get a rhythm for the team. Speaking of, so Stan Van Gundy, I think he's a, you know, he's a really good coach. Last year it didn't look like it because the team was just kind of crap. What do you look for him to do this season with this talent? Give me an idea of what kind of things he's going to run. How do you think they're going to mesh together?
I mean, I think it's going to look a lot like what they were doing at the end of the year, or even kind of comparable to what they were. Well, maybe even more close to what they were doing with Brandon Jennings, which I didn't think that was comparable, or not comparable. I mean, sustainable, but that kind of spread it out, give Drummond as much room as he needs, you know, find shooters. It's really the funny thing about it, and I don't want to say this because, you know, from our perspective, it's a lot easier to say this is simple, this is easy. But when you think about it in that, you know, way, I mean, having two big guys and having one okay shooter or two, I mean, if you have, think about it, no shooters, two big guys, and a point guard, that's a lot harder to figure out what to do with that ball than it would be if you have four guys who can shoot the ball, counting, well, three guys and then a big guy. So it's really simple. It's all Reggie Jackson has to do is, you know, he's got a couple options. He's got a big guy who can catch everything at the rim. So a lot of it is going to be based around that pick and roll. A lot of it's going to be based around Jackson finding guys. And I think you know, you would hope that over the course of the year, whether it's, you know, Stanley Johnson or whether it's KCP or even Marcus Morris shows an ability to dribble the ball, because I'm not convinced of that either, but somebody else finds a way to create those. Somebody else can create that offense, then that would be good. And that's kind of what leads me to the Brandon Jennings thing, which people are – I saw a lot of the questions we got today on Twitter where people saying, who's going to start Reggie or Brandon? And I just – I don't even see a way that Brandon Jennings starts, and I don't even see a way that Brandon Jennings is playing like he's capable of until maybe around Halloween – well, not Halloween, maybe around Thanksgiving, just because he's got a long way to go to come back. And obviously it's not going to be – you know, the problems that people have had before with missing time at the start of the year, I mean, that's an important part, especially when you've got, you know, four or five new teammates. And so he's not going to have the chemistry with those – the Morrises and the Ilyasovas. And, I mean, hopefully he does well. I think he would be – perfect as that six-man kind of guy who can kind of have the ability to do what he wants out there. Because if you think about the Pistons' second five, which fits into the same mold that Van Gundy has for that starting five, I mean, Baynes isn't the jumper that Drummond is, but he's smart. Then you have Tolliver, and you have Stanley Johnson, and you have Meeks, and you still have shooters, and you have some athleticism, and it gives Jennings a lot of room to operate there too. And he can look to score more, because at that point, you know, if you're the backup guard like that, that's kind of your role, is to score or find somebody. And I think he's beginning to learn that balance of when I should score and when I should pass. So I think if he comes back with the right mindset and with his, you know, Achilles back, he could be a really important sixth man for them. Kind of, I don't want to say the same type of player as like Lou Williams was for the Raptors last year, but that level of importance where you can play him with your starters, you can play him with your bench, and he can fit into a lot of different roles. And I think that's what the hope is for him, but obviously it's a concern considering the injury and how very few guys have come back and been themselves, although there hasn't been that many young guys who have dealt with Achilles recently. So,
yeah, and that's a scary thing, is that we have very few Achilles injuries and then very few successful recovery from Achilles injuries to fall back on. And my concern is that Jennings is very talented, but, you know, he's a score first point guard. He's not a great shooter. He's very streaky. I mean, I don't know. I've seen from him shows me that he's the kind of guy who would be fine with swallowing the, you know, the pride a little bit, the ego, and saying, okay, I don't mind playing, you know, 18 to 22 minutes a game. And I don't know. I just don't. I don't know if he's that kind of player. And again, and maybe it's fair to him to move him on and let him go somewhere else. I'm not sure where he would really fit. Let's play a quick game though. Let's say you became GM for a day, for a week. What? Give me like two or three moves that you maybe would try to do just to tweak your roster and give you guys a little boost. Anything you see? Anything you think about? Any kind of player that any type of player you try to add? Anybody you think that you try to move?
See, that's tough because, you know, it was funny actually. I saw, you know, because Markieff Morris got fined today for his demanding of a trade, and obviously he would love to play with his brother again. And I kind of thought about that, and I was thinking, how could I make that work? And I, you know, went to the trade machine, and the only trade I had that worked, and the thing about trading for Markieff Morris, people have asked me about, and I'm just like, I don't know, man. It's a very touchy thing because, A, you know, although Marcus and Markieff are, you know, obviously super tight and love playing together and have played their best ball together, I don't think they're the kind of, just from their past transgressions off the court, I don't know that you want them together all the time because it's not always a good thing. And that's, you know, it's funny as I'm, you know, down in Florida, I cover, you know, a lot of stuff in Lakeland, which is where the Detroit Tigers come in. But the Pouncey brothers from the NFL, they're both from down here. And when they get together, they've been known to get in trouble occasionally. So it's not necessarily just the Morrises, but, you know, they have a knack for being in the wrong place at the wrong time or doing the wrong thing. So that's a problem. And D, Markieff Morris, apparently, you know, if by last year's game matters, hates Kentavious Caldwell-Pope because they got into it late in the game last year. Yeah, there was a point when it was during the Pistons' long losing streak there at the start, and KCP had a chance to tie or win the game with like 20 seconds left, and he missed a three. And in the locker room afterwards, Morris Markieff said, we knew he was going to miss it because he has no heart. And that got Van Gundy all riled up, and that got KCP, who's quiet, is all riled up too. So I don't know if those three.
I remember.
I don't think those three can coexist. But if you were to do it, I think the only trade that I saw that worked, and I wouldn't have done it, was if Phoenix sent Morris and oh my gosh, who's their wing? He got in trouble for DUI last year.
PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker. You could send those two to Detroit for like KCP and I think Brandon Jennings. But it doesn't make sense for Phoenix to do that. But the Pistons don't have any salary unless they were to trade Ilya Sova back over, but I don't think he's eligible. So there's really, I don't know, man. There's nothing I want to trade because I still want to see how all these spare parts work. And the difference, and you kind of, it's funny you had mentioned Boston, because I look at Boston and I know that they have the same thing. They have a lot of guys who aren't, there's nobody that's really bad. But it's finding out which of these guys who are kind of just all at the same level, which ones deserve to play more and which ones are going to help you more, which ones fit together best. And that's kind of where I'm at with the Pistons because, you know, those two stretch fours, Tolliver and Ilyasova, they should both be good. But maybe Marcus Morris is a good stretch four, which means one of those guys loses playing time, which means you need a three. And it's just there's so many possibilities. I have to see how the puzzle kind of goes together. And then I would say after, you know, if you ask me again in December, I would say, well, Ilyasova is back to being how he was 2 years ago where he couldn't shoot the ball. So obviously they need a new four. So I don't know. If there's a lot of – that's the thing Van Gundy's going to have is he's going to have a lot of flexibility with lineups. I mean, you can play pretty much – if you take those non-Drummond players, you can play damn near every combination you want around him. And it might work in stretches just because he's good enough to rebound and take care of that stuff. And if he improves defensively, then it's a no-brainer. You can do whatever you want. But, I mean, there's a lot of potential fits. I just don't know which ones are the right fits yet.
Yeah, and the key word there that you just used, that you hit it on the head again, is flexibility. You guys are at every position. You have, you're a couple of players deep, and it's not just like you got Bones come off the bench. And I'm finding out Billy Silva's nickname is Turkish Thunder on Basketball Reference. I'm pretty sure that's made up. yeah, so you guys got to call him that from now on. But he's a career 37% three-point shooter. So, I mean, yeah, he had that aberration.
Yeah,
in Milwaukee, it was pretty bad. And last year, he was actually really good. He shot 39%. So I think you're safe there. Let's go talk about Drummond because that's pretty much where everything kind of hinges on. He is the franchise centerpiece, am I correct? And
yeah.
he's a man. One of my favorite YouTube clips is that there's a collection of his greatest plays. He picks Wade's pockets, back-to-back plays, and, you know, gets an open court and dunks. And he's a freak of nature. He just has to put it together. He has, you know, I think he's barely scratching his talent. And he's still really, really young, isn't he? How old is he now?
I want to say he's only 22. I think he turned 22 this year. He was born in 93, so I want to say that's about it.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, he's 22. So, I mean, looking at him, and again, this is another question somebody asked, is this going to be the year we see him finally break out in offensive repertoire? And I don't think so because I just don't think that's in the cards for him. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, you know, we don't really anymore. We used to get on Dwight Howard so much because – he only had one move. He had the little hook shot, and it worked pretty damn well because Dwight Howard was the best center in the league for a long time. And,
right.
You know, I think at that point you kind of just want more. And with Drummond, he showed the ability to do that little jump hook. And you could give it to him down there, and it wasn't like he just froze up and flung it at the rim. He had an idea. And as the season got on, went more on, and he got more comfortable and he got more space, it was one of those things where early you looked at him and it was like when his back was to the basket, he had no idea where he was. He kind of just got disoriented. But by the end, he could grab it, drop step, and hook. And that's all you really need when you've got that much size. And when, if you think about it, I mean, if he gets 6 offensive rebounds a game, there's probably 6 points there off of those putbacks. And then there's a couple more off of alley-oops. So he really doesn't have to create that much offense because he's just not your hub. That's just not what he is. And if you wanted to be that, that would be more than I think would be fair to him because it'd be kind of like, you know, and I made this joke last year before the season. I said, if he ends up being DeAndre Jordan, this is before DeAndre blew up last year, if he ends up being just this defensive, athletic stalwart, would you be okay with that? And at first, people were like, no, DeAndre Jordan's. But now, I mean, if he was DeAndre Jordan last year, this year, and not Dwight Howard, because that's a whole other variation. But I mean, if he just did that, that's pretty good. And I think he's better offensively than DeAndre Jordan because he's got at least one move. I mean, they both are terrible free throw shooters, but at least you can give Andre the ball and he can score sometimes. And I think, as you mentioned, those last like 30 games, he did a lot of stuff and he was obviously scoring more than just putbacks and alley-oops.
Yeah, and we it's kind of cliche to talk about, you know, quote-unquote today's NBA. But, yeah, I mean, you don't want a guy you can dump it into and, you know, the post-up lasts for 8 seconds. That's just not how the game is really played nowadays. You want your big man to be mobile. You want to be able to set, really, you know, wipe out guys with screens and then dive hard to the bucket and people look for him and be a threat where he subs in the defense. You want him to be able to crash the boards and be able to protect the rim. One of the questions, and we're going to – yeah, we'll jump into it a little bit. Why not? One of the questions was from at Waymath H, Matthew Way. He said, how close did Drummond proceed within the organization to becoming a great defender? And that's something I want to talk about right now, because as athletic as he is and the shot blocks are there, I think he averaged almost 2 last year, but he hasn't been great defensively. What is it? What can he improve on? What do you think? Sam Van Gundy did a great job with Dwight. What do you see from him this season? What do you see Drummond? Is he going to make that defensive leap? Is it just focus? What's going on with him in his defense?
I mean, I don't know what they think inside, but I mean, you know, out the doors, I mean, if you look at, you know, he had struggles last year. He definitely had problems at times. But if you look at his team, you know, his defense as a team, I mean, you know, you'd expect him being this big guy and being this, you know, capable shot blocker. You know, his block shots have dropped since his rookie year. And I think the thing about him as he's gotten older, and this has kind of changed as the Pistons have, because honestly, under Mo Cheeks and, you know, in the previous regimes and stuff, I don't think there was a real plan with him. It was kind of just when he first came into the league, it was like, well, here's Andre. We're going to baby him first. And then once they started to actually utilize him, it was just kind of, all right, big man, go out there and do what makes you feel good. And that worked because he went for every shot, and he was worse defensively for it. But last year he improved. He still wasn't great. And I think the more he begins to learn to keep his feet down and not try and block every shot. And, you know, I mean, you know, blocking shots is obviously a sign of good defense, but I don't think it's the – you know, if you don't block shots, you're not good. I mean, as long as he can get that ability to, he's huge. I mean, at almost 7 foot and 280, as long as you can get in guys' ways and know how to move your feet and know where to be, that'll help. And again, I think that's another year of being under Van Gundy, is that you just see, you know, a guy who probably, I don't know that Mo Cheeks was a bad coach. I think he was. I only covered Mo Cheeks' team once, and I know that John Lawyer was a bad coach because he was just an interim. But that second year he had, I don't think there was ever any sort of system. There was never any plan. It was just go out there and defend your guy. And so now that he's in a system, I think that sort of organization and everything, that was too much for him initially last year. And that's why he struggled early in the year, because there was a lot of stuff going on when, if you think about it, I mean, his first 2 years, everything was real vanilla. Even in college, defenses aren't anything complex,
right?
And his UConn team wasn't very good, so I think this was the first time it was information overload. But as the year went on, he got more comfortable, and I think this year he'll make another step. And if he can make the step like Greg Monroe did, Greg Monroe was just an okay defender this past year, but that worked. I mean, at Drummond's ability and athleticism, an okay defender at that size and that athleticism is pretty darn good in this league, you know, in this NBA.
Yeah.
That's actually the whole thing, though. I mean, if he doesn't improve defensively, you know, they're going to really underwhelm, and that's probably the biggest concern. It's not a big concern, but that would be the biggest thing to derail them, would be if his defensive, you know, improvement is a little slow, then that's going to affect the rest of the team, because, you know, he's not going to be the guy you funnel defenders into and he blocks a shot, but you've got to have that big, daunting guy, and if he's in foul trouble every game, that's going to really put him in a hole.
Yeah, and I agree with you that he's the you know, he, it kind of starts and ends with him. But Reggie Jackson has to get better on perimeter too. He was pretty bad defensively last season.
Yeah,
and I don't think he ever. I actually did a piece on him on B-Wall Breakdown. He definitely has a propensity to be. He has the tools, like you said. He's long armed. He's fast. Can do what it takes. So, what do you see? What do you see for this team this year? Everyone thought last year going into the season because, you know, Van Gundy was there and Josh Smith. I never liked the Josh Smith move. Everyone thought that, all right, these guys could be a fringe playoff team. And that flamed out horribly. Well, no, you guys are actually in the running even down in the last couple of weeks. That last losing streak, you're in the East. That's how. That last, 10 losses in 11 games kind of, put it out of your reach. But you guys still made a nice little push. So, yeah, give me a quick projection. What do you see you guys finishing here in the East?
I'm still looking into this, and I'm calling copyright in this story because I still want to look into this. But I think they're going to be – I know Houston set the NBA record last year by shooting 33 threes a game. And I think the Pistons are not going to be that. They're not going to be that, that volume of shots. But they're going to take a ton of threes. They're going to spread the floor out. They're going to try and get Drummond as many one-on-one breathing room looks as they can. And that's going to be a good formula on offense. And as long as their defense can be better. And even last year, they were middle of the road. I think they were 15th in points per game. And their points, they struggled at certain things, but overall they weren't the worst. They actually had improved. That was the one area that Van Gundy really, helped them. So if their offense ends up, finding an identity and, say Drummond turns into the all-star, we think, and Reggie Jackson plays close to what he did at the end of the year. I mean, I can see them going, near that 500 level, which would put them around 7-8. Because, it's hard to say that they'd make the playoffs today because you never really know who the teams that made the playoffs last year and are going to drop out. I mean, it's safe to say that Brooklyn will probably fall out of the playoffs, which opens up one spot. But then it kind of comes down to that Detroit and Indiana and other guys competing for one spot. And, just it all depends. I think, Boston, Boston's going to be in that same running for the final spot too. So, it kind of comes down to that. I think 500 last year was good enough to get you in, but it might.
Right.
I think the East got better. I think the East being a joke is going to be less of a punchline this year. But I think around 500 would be good enough to get you in the running, at least, on the fringe of it. And that's kind of where I see them at.
Okay, well, while we're there, let's talk about it. Give me your quick rundown of what do you think the top eight is going to shake out like. We won't hold you to it. I will. I'm not going to lie. I'll come back and make fun of you on Twitter if you're way off. But, yeah, give me your top four. Give me your top four in the East for this coming season.
I still think Cleveland's going to be number one. I think Chicago will be up there. I think Atlanta will be up there. I'm not as high on the Bucks as everybody else. I'm not sure how Greg Monroe fits with their defensive, thing. If he's going to be playing center there, I don't know who's going to be the shot blocker or rim protector if they're playing small like they usually do. Washington will be in that mix still. Toronto is the one team I could see strangely. They were pretty good last year, but I think I could see them falling off for some reason, whether it be just the group and the coaching staff not getting along or just whatever. That'd be one of the higher teams I could see falling out. But I still think between Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, and Washington, that's a pretty safe bet. And then, Miami, I forgot about Miami. Dang, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams that got better. Because I think Miami's in the top four, so bump Washington out. And then Charlotte could have a chance. I like Miami a lot, man. I don't see a hole on their team right now. There's a lot of ifs. It's kind of like you have to wonder if Whiteside can be that again. You have to wonder if Dwayne Wade can be healthy, if Dane can be healthy, if Bosch can stay healthy. There's a lot of question marks, but if they stay healthy, they're going to be, as fun to watch and as good on both ends as anybody, I think.
Yeah, I think Bosch is going to step up and kind of stake his claim as a top three power forward, but Dwayne Wade's not going to be healthy. That's just not who he is now. Last four seasons, it's been, the knees, the hamstrings. He's going to miss time. When he does play, he'll be limited, around the middle of the season when that wear and tear kind of kicks in. And hey, I'm listen, knock on wood. I'm gonna hope. Let's say I'm gonna hope he's healthy and he can play 70, 75 games. I just don't know if he can do it because he hadn't shown the ability to do it. I'm like you with Whiteside. I'm probably a little less high on him than a lot of people because I mean the guy was out of the league for like 2 years, and there's a reason for that, you know. And
yeah,
it has almost a Linsanity feel to it. The fact that, you know, I think he had maybe 49, played 49 games, and he had maybe 30 really good games last season. And I was like, oh, you know, they got the center they need. Let's see it. Let's see if he can keep his head together and play. But, yeah, I'm with you on Miami. I'm pretty high on them. And I'm with you. This is why you're one of my favorite followers, because Toronto, just something about them, just here's the secret. Them and Washington, both last year, they came out of the gates really hot. If you look at both of them after January, they were putrid up until, like, maybe the last few weeks when they kind of got it together. They both went on
even,
these tailspins.
And even Toronto's additions, I mean, they got Damari Carroll, and on paper that's a good fit because Damari Carroll is kind of the guy who can fit with anybody. But then I've read stuff that says they want to play him at power forward, and I've talked to people about this before too, is, you know, we've gotten to this point where we fall in love with these small ball power forwards, but I don't think it's as simple as this guy can shoot and he can rebound at his own position, so let's just play him at the four. It'll definitely work. I don't think it's just, that's not how it works. I don't think anybody who's, you know, good at their position at the three can automatically just go up there and play power forward and defend guys like that and have to rebound more. And it just seems like a very odd thing to assume to work. And I mean, they lost Amir Johnson, who has lost a step recently, but still was a legitimate power forward for them. So I don't know. It's kind of like in Indiana, the same thing. Both of them have really gone all in on this small ball stuff surrounding a big guy. And I'm just not convinced that it's going to be as, you know, it's not going to work quite as well as it has for, you know, Miami when they were playing LeBron at power forward, or the Knicks when they played Carmelo at power forward and they were good. So, I mean, it kind of matters who you've got there. It doesn't matter that it's just, you know, hey, this guy can play this position. He can give us what we want. So let's just try it. It just seems kind of risky.
Yeah, with Toronto, I agree. I think Indiana, they are kind of, they're rebuilding on the fly around Paul George. And, again, they have Paul George. I don't think Toronto has a Paul George player.
We don't know what Paul George is, though. Do we know what Paul George is going to be?
He already made an All-Star. He's a legitimate talent. And, yeah, he broke the leg, but I think he's going to come back from that pretty well. And, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a Kevin Durant level or even maybe what level? I don't know. He's definitely, I think, he's All-Star level talent. And he's a good building block. I'm not saying he's going to be a franchise savior. But, you know, building around him, I like Miles Turner. I like that that Larry Bird said, hey, I'm going to join the present and stop playing the jumbo lineups, and we're going to go small and fast. I think, I think Paul – so are you not really – you're not high on Paul George?
Not as a power forward. I think Paul George is better off as your two and your three. And I don't think, and honestly, from what I've seen, I don't think he's super enthused about having to play power forward either.
Oh, yeah. About that, I think this is a little bit of machismo between him and Bird, where, you know, he kind of, I don't want to do it, and Bird made sure he came public and said, listen, you're going to do it with the franchise I asked you to. And maybe I'm completely wrong. I need to get my man Tim Donahue on here from 8.9 seconds, and we'll talk about it. Because I can't see. I don't think they'll do it for extended periods of time. I think, you know, what they roam out there for situationally, you know, and try to get them there for 15 minutes a game, power forward, they're not going to get them beat up. They're not going to put them down there and let them get eaten alive by, you know, the big bruisers. That Bird's not stupid. So,
right,
I don't know.
Right.
I like the Patriots. I don't think they make it. I think they're going to be on the fringe. And I really want Detroit, I think, has a puncher's chance to get in there, like you said, that 7th-8th seed. Such an intriguing team. Not quite like Orlando, because Orlando's a lot younger, but there's so many pieces, and we have no clue. They have a pretty high level of variance. If Detroit got in as the 6th, 7th, 8th seed, I wouldn't be surprised. If something went wrong and the chemistry was just terrible and Detroit kind of flamed out, I really wouldn't be that surprised either, because we just don't know right now.
Yeah.
Who's your crunch time lineup? Give me your crunch time lineup. We got other starters. Who would you like to see on the floor in the last 5 minutes of a close game?
This is going to sound funky, but right now I think just because I'm not familiar with Ilyasova much, I love Tolliver because I think he's too smart and he's always in the right spot. And I know he lacks physically the ability to be a full-time guy, but he would be my power forward. I'd have Drummond. I'd probably have Stanley Johnson just because I think he's a better defender at that position than Marcus Morris. And then I'd probably go with Caldwell Pope and Reggie Jackson. But if Brandon Jennings comes back and is good, you could probably sell me on Brandon Jennings at point guard and Reggie at shooting guard, but that's a long way away. And that's got to be – they got to sell me on that one first.
Yeah, because we know that the two-guard lineups are not like all the rage, but they can be definitely effective, and both those guys are – you know, they can do things with the ball that you'd like to see together. So,
yeah.
There you go. At Mo Money, Mo Pop Fabry, that's – you're welcome. That was kind of the question he had asked on Twitter. He asked – which five-man lineup are you most excited for this year is what he asked. So there you go. We got a lot of questions, man. I'm glad we got so many Pistons fans out there. I can't even run through them all because you've already hit most of them as we talked. Here's one. At Real Symbolism, and he spells that with like Simba, like the lion. At Real Symbolism, he asks, who needs to take a bigger step for Detroit to ascend the East ladder, Reggie Jackson or Andre Drummond?
I think Drummond still, because I think Reggie Jackson, even if he were to play like he did last year and that was it, I mean, that'd be pretty good, but Drummond's got to take the step because he's got to get, if he gets better defensively and, you know, if he ends up being that 16-16 guy, then that's going to be money in the bank at least. I mean, you know, he was a little inconsistent. So if he figures it out on both sides, then that affects everybody.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I think he, like I said, he's the linchpin of everything. As he goes, the franchise will go. You mind asking a couple more questions on Twitter? Do you mind that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. At Buddy Grizzard, I think this is one of our friends in the program over at I think Hawkscoop. Hawkscoop. He wants to know how genius does SVG look for taking Stanley Johnson over Justice Winslow. We haven't discussed this enough.
I don't know. I was probably the only person, I felt like the only person who wasn't that high on Justice Winslow coming in, mostly because all of Justice Winslow's success in the tournament and late in the season for Duke, and it was good, but it all came because he was playing power forward. And he is 6'5", and he's not bulky, and I don't think he's going to be able to go out there and handle the ball. And his role with Duke was just to, here we're going to give you the ball and you're going to create off the dribble against these, you know, slow, bigger college fours. And in the NBA, that's not going to happen. He's going to have to play against guys who are just as athletic and just as, you know, small ball-y as he is. So it's not going to be as much of an advantage. I don't see that style working for him. And they tried that a lot in Summer League, and that was kind of his role, was to create for others. But I just don't see why he'd be giving the ball to Justice Winslow to create over Dwayne Wade and company there. So I just think Stanley Johnson, he just is solid in so many places, and that just felt like a good fit. And I knew that he had played, you know, I know he's a small forward, and, you know, he can play other positions, but he's a three, and he's going to be good there, and he knows what to do there. So I don't know. I just like that, and I kind of just, I don't know. He's got a very smooth game for being kind of rough around the edges, if that makes sense. He doesn't look like he's really trying that hard, even though I know he's not the smoothest of a ball handler or a shooter.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't get what people were saying, you know. I can't believe they – I think it was Rick Boucher. He's like, oh, man, you know, what were they thinking taking Johnson over Winslow? I didn't get it. And I think maybe being stepped away from the college game maybe helps me because I can just watch them. You know, I can watch tape on both of them, and the Draft Express has really good videos, and I didn't see what people were asking about Stanley Johnson. The kid looks really solid.
Johnson is playing for Duke and he helps lead the Blue Devils to the title, he's getting drafted. He's the one everybody's like, oh, he's a can't-miss player. It's all about circumstance, too. Like you said, you're not connected to that, so there's no emotional thing there. But, I mean, if Arizona and Stanley Johnson were the ones who – looked great all tournament and won the championship, then, you know, he's going to be the one that we're all, you know, cooing over. Whereas, you know, Winslow happened to be the guy who was on the team that won it all. So everyone fell in love with him over that time, and that kind of is what sold us on it.
Yeah, and I heard talk about, like, something about Stanley Johnson's heart or, you know, he just doesn't have it. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I just watched, you know, from Draft Express. I'm just watching that, and I'm watching the summer league. The kid just, he can flat out play. If you can play, you can play. Yeah, we actually hit most of the questions, so I'm not going to hit them, you know, we're not going to repeat a lot of them. Sorry, guys, you hit the questions in. Hopefully you listened and you heard the answers. I'm going to play a little game with you real quick before we get out of here. Let's play a little over-under. Reggie Jackson, 16 points a game and 7 assists a game on 44%. Give me the over-unders and all those.
I want to say over. I want to say about that on points. I don't know if it's push okay, because I think he's right around 15, 16. I think the assist,
I'll take the push.
He'll be he'll be closer to 8 assists. And I think the field goal percentage on that's probably the absolute best. It'd be 44%. But I would bank on it being more like 43, which I don't know if that's a big deal or not. It looks like it when you see somebody shooting 43 versus 44, but I mean it's negligible. So I would say around that. Yeah, that sounds right, because you know I'm more worried about his 3-point shooting, which should be. I mean, if he can shoot close to like 33%, you know that's not great, but it's good enough if you're having the ball and shooting a lot. So I mean. That'd be the hope.
Ooh, I wouldn't get above 33 because we know he's not the 39 he showed towards the end, but let's hope he's not the 27 he showed before that either. So, okay, Andre Drummond, 15 and 15 on 55%. Give me the over-unders.
Above on the points, above on the field goal. Well, about the field goal, maybe above actually field goal, right at like maybe a little less rebounds though. I think he's going to be. I think the one thing with Drummond I would worry about is he's going to be kind of shell-shocked at how much of a focal point he's going to be in terms of being the defensive focal point, being the offensive kind of pick-and-roll kind of trendsetter there, and then being the guy who has to rebound his ass off every time. So I think his numbers might end up dropping a little at the start again, but I would say he's right around that, kind of that 15, 14. And I mean, maybe even more blocks than he has in previous years. Maybe 3 blocks, and then, yeah, 55%. I would hope that – I'm hoping the free throw percentage can get up into the 45s. If the free throw percentage is at 45, he's made a significant improvement there, if you can believe that.
Oh, that's another good question we had. I'll make sure I shout out the person out at the end of the show after we hang up. But, yeah, somebody asked if he can't get his free throw percentage up, what kind of cap does that put on Detroit's ceiling? Is that something like Shaq was a terrible free throw shooter, you know, for most of his career. It, you know, didn't stop him from being great, but this guy's not Shaq. We all hate Hacka Andre or Hacka, you know, whatever they're going to do, but it's not going to go away anytime soon. Is that something that can, yeah, here we go. My man, more money, more Fabry. If Drummond ever develops his free throws, how severely does that limit the team's long-term ceiling? Talk to me a little bit about that.
I think, you know, the thing about it, when he shoots free throws, it doesn't look, his form isn't bad. It's just he doesn't get, his rotation is very funky. He gets that Joakim Noah side rotation sometimes. Sometimes it's a knuckleball, sometimes it looks good. But they actually, the Pistons just hired their first shooting coach ever in June, and he's going to work with guys. And I think, the primary reason was probably to straighten out Drummond's free throws and Stanley Johnson's jumper. So maybe that works. I mean, I know that I've heard interviews with Van Gundy, and he said, basically, if we can get him above 50%, then that's fine. Because then if you foul him intentionally, it's almost a dumb idea because he's scoring still. And it's not like where he's at with 39% now, where if you foul him, the chances are he's going to miss it. So I think that's not going to be a from last year to this year kind of thing. But in 2 years, if he's floating around 52, 53%, then that's good. That's an improvement. If you think about it, I mean, a 21-point improvement or 11-point improvement in free throw shooting is crazy. Nobody does that because nobody's bad like he is, I guess. But if he can get past the point of hacking, then he'll be fine.
Wow, I didn't realize he was that bad, man. Jesus. 39% last year. Holy crap. Yeah, man, so much potential on your team. I don't think you need everything just to break right because, you know, it's not a make-or-break season. I think the pieces are in place for the next couple of years. For you guys to take that step into the perennial playoff teams. My man at HammerTime1009, he says, give me 3 reasons why they miss the playoffs and 3 reasons why they make them. And he said for, you know, for his money, he thinks they sneak in.
Three reasons why they make it. Andre Drummond is an all-star. Reggie Jackson shows he's more of what he was at the end of his time with the Pistons last year than he was at the start. And Stanley Johnson proved that he can be an all-around starter who can be relied upon right away. And I think that's probably the biggest question, I think. I'm pretty sold on Drummond being an all-star level player this year. And then Jackson, you know, that one, I think I'm pretty good with that one. But, yeah, I mean, and it's not an indictment of Stanley Johnson at all if he can't be a full-time starter in year one. I mean, whoop-de-doo. I mean, maybe it's in year two. But if he can do that next year, that's for sure going to push into the right direction. And then three reasons they wouldn't would just be that, you know, if Marcus Morris can't shoot, he's pretty much a wash. If Reggie Jackson is more like the previous version, then that's kind of a downer. And then if Caldwell Pope doesn't improve at all, then that's going to be another hole because that puts you in the same position where your wings are just so weak. And if you look at the good teams in the league, and we've talked about it, I mean, Cleveland and Chicago and Miami and Atlanta, at least that's just in the East. I mean, in Washington, everybody's guards are good. So if your guards aren't good, then you're going to be at a disadvantage every single night, especially when you play the good teams. So, you know, if they don't show improvement on the perimeter, that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, but like you said, man, you guys brought in so many pieces, it's almost impossible not to improve. Because, I mean, Marcus last year shot 36% from three. Last couple of years, he's about, I don't know, about 37-38%. So I think you're safe there too, man. All right, so give it
yeah,
to
but
me.
Look at Jody, Look at Jody Meeks, though. Jody Meeks couldn't shoot. Ben Gordon couldn't shoot. Charlie Villanueva couldn't shoot. Guys come to Detroit and forget how to shoot. It's weird. It just happens.
Yeah, let's hope a full training camp gets you guys together, man. That's why I'm not worried about OKC too much. You know, yeah, the defense sucks after they made the trades, but give guys a summer rest, full training camp, let them come in, and then we'll see what we got. So give me your bold prediction. Detroit make the playoffs, yes or no?
Yes. I think, actually, here my bold prediction would be that they would be this year's Milwaukee in that, like, they would come out and they would float around that fourth and fifth spot for a long time before kind of tailing off at the end. And then I think whoever they play in the – I don't think that would still put them in that 41-41 range. But I think whoever they get in the playoffs, they'll give them a fight just because they're a really awkward matchup for a lot of people. And they gave teams problems last year at times when they were playing well, when they were shooting the ball well and they were, you know, doing all their stuff that they are hopefully getting into this year. It was a unique challenge, I think, for a lot of teams. So, you know, if they make the playoffs, I think they'll be a tough out. I don't think they'll win a playoff series, but if they make it, the team won't go in there and just, you know, step on them and move on, unless it's Cleveland. That's about the only team that could step on them and move on.
What year does Detroit make the conference finals?
You're five of Stan Van Gundy. Unless it just, it all depends. The thing is that I just don't see who. I mean, it would have to be, you know, not this year, not next year. Maybe 2 years from now would be the earliest, because if that everything goes according to plan, you get another rookie or two that gives you more depth. You probably make another move to get more depth or a better player. Reggie Jackson turns into a star you'd expect or hope. You know, Drummond turns into a stud, and then Johnson turns into something. You have to. Those are the three guys, though. If those three end up being where the Pistons expect them to be, I mean, that would be the sky's the limit at that point. But, I mean, there's so much more that you have to fill in around them still, because, you know, we talk about this team being a bunch of flexible parts now. You know, being flexible parts to make the 8 seed is a lot different than being flexible parts that will make the conference finals, no matter how weak or strong the East is.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, this year is more about Van Gundy finding out his lineups. All these guys, of course, won't be here in 3 years. You know, they're going to pare it down. I think your core is going to be Reggie, Drummond, and, of course, Stanley Johnson. That sounds like a pretty good core. And, yeah, I'm with you, man. I think in a couple years they're going to be pretty dangerous. Let's keep our fingers crossed. I always like to see good basketball and see good teams. Man, what you got anything going on the rest of the summer?
Nah, man. If that's about it.
That's it, man. So let the people know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can read your stuff, bro.
Piston Powered. You can. I'm on the Twitter account there at Piston Powered, not Pistons. Piston. Or you can follow me on my own account, Brady BRADY_4. Fred, F-R-E-D.
Yeah, man. Oh, last question before you go, I'll let you go. You do look like you're 18 years old. Are you Ricky Rubio?
I'll take Ricky Rubio. I like that. It's kind of, if I could pass just a little better, I'd be like him because I can't really shoot, so that would work out.
Yeah, man. It's like the picture with you and the beard. You look like a kid playing dress up, and you got a fake beard on. Hey, man, I appreciate you coming on, and let's have you on again during the season. Let's hope it's during a nice winning streak, and we can talk about how great you guys are. And me, you can brag about how good Reggie Jackson is when nobody else likes him.
Right on, man. I appreciate it. Hey, it was a good time. All right, man.
All right, man. Thanks. You know what? I got stuck at doing these podcasts, so I have really good guests. You were great, man. Appreciate you having on. We'll talk again soon,
brother.
I'll
see you, James. Right,
yes, sir. Not one of my cleaner shows. That's all right. We have fun. I'm always going to stutter and stumble. I had too much coffee before I came on the air. I'd like to thank everybody for all the questions that came in. Sorry we couldn't get – I mean, we just can't get to them all because while we're talking, as you hear, we kind of cover a lot of that stuff, so there's no point really asking. Yeah, man, Fredrickson, I know I've pronounced this one. He's a real good follow, real smart guy, very reasonable approach. I know people aren't really that high on Reggie Jackson, man. It's the metrics don't add up to a great player, and he hasn't historically been great. I thought he was pretty good as a starter for OKC a couple years ago when Russ was out. Other people obviously don't agree. I'd like to thank everybody for the questions. At Chris Medina. My man, at DTD Podcast. That's the Down the Dunk Podcast over there at Daily Thunder. My man, at Lunch Beer. My man, at Real Symbolism. At AP Dritch, number 9. Richard Sedano. Appreciate all the questions. We can't get to them all. I think I might start another podcast and just have like a fan podcast for you guys so you guys can call in, we can talk basketball. But yeah, that was a really good show. Detroit's going to be very interesting to watch. Stan Van Gundy is a well-respected good coach. I think he has all the pieces now to make some moves. Injuries, that's always the X factor. Let's hope they can stay healthy and make a push in the East. I like them better than I think a lot of people like them. I think they could sneak in that 7th, 8th seed. So, look forward to seeing that. Hey, man, everybody, thanks for listening. And I'll be out there next week. We'll have another one set for you guys. I think we're going to have Dallas next week. My man, Kirk Serious Face. We'll talk Dallas. And maybe hopefully the last season of Dirt and Whiskey. We love him, but it's about that time. All right. So, that's it for me. I'm out.